This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 642 of the Dressage Radio Show, official podcast of the United States Dressage Federation on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, Arena Saddles, Horse Report System, and TotalSaddleFit.com. On today's USDF episode, we will be joined by Fee Anderson, who discusses training young horses. We'll then be introduced to our new sponsor, Horse Report Systems. After that, Lahua Custer, who talks about her experience coaching at the Paralympics. And to finish up, Fee joins us for a trainer tip.
This is Reese Koppler-Stanfield from Georgetown, Kentucky.
And this is Philip Parks from Rockwood, Ontario, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show.
Well, hi, Phil. How are you this week?
Reese, I have to update you on the weather conditions up here in Canada. And as you could probably predict, we had snow. So,
Like I said, it was 24 degrees here in Lexington this morning. So I am hoping that we get it out of our systems this week because the largest regional championship is coming to Kentucky next week. So this is what I've heard. This was on Facebook. So next week is the largest U.S. dressage finals ever. There's the first youth division, which is training through fourth level. It's the first time they're using the Rolex Arena. So this is going to be interesting because let me tell you, it's pretty far walk from the stadium, from the new arena, the Alltech Arena, to the stadium. It's a decent walk. So it sounds like they have 16 judges that are flying in for next week. So 16 judges. It's going to be a big, big one. So Phil, like we had talked about, because people are coming to Lexington and, I was born and raised here in Lexington. So first of all, you're at the U.S. finals and you hear my voice, you'll probably give me that look and please say hello and track me down. Cause I always love, talking to listeners and hearing your guys' story. And
unless you're on a horse, looking focused.
Big Mike is, if I'm on Big Mike, maybe not the time, or I have five horses going or so. So, but it'll be fun. I actually show an open intermediate one on Thursday, and then Big Mike's doing the U.S. finals for intermediate one on Friday. So I'm really looking forward to that. He's knock on wood. I'm knocking right now. It's been really fun. It's been fun to get him ready. And he actually has, I just kind of gave him a little time off of regionals. But again, we haven't had to travel because our regionals were here. And the horse park's about 10 minutes from my farm. So my guys haven't had to travel so much this summer or this fall. They travel a lot this summer. So it's been nice. So so we'll head over on Thursday because he's been to the horse park quite a bit. And so we're just going to spend one night there. But people that are coming to Lexington, I just, a couple things. I do not think Keeneland will be racing during the finals, but it's a really fun place to go if you're looking for a place.
They'll still be doing morning workouts.
Yep. Yeah. They'll be doing morning workouts.
Yeah. Get there at 6 and watch the horses run. That's really, I enjoy that.
Yeah. It's really fun. And then they have the track kitchen there. It's really good for breakfast. Not healthy, but really good for breakfast. it'll be Kentucky breakfast. There are also a lot of thoroughbred farm tours. If you can jump on one of those tours, and they'll have some really good information at the Kentucky Horse Park on some of those tours. They're really, really cool. I love to go on them and they're great. Any bourbon tour. So Kentucky's on the Bourbon Trail. Phil, what's your favorite place to go? Woodford Reserve is beautiful.
Woodford is beautiful and it's pretty close. So I think that would be my recommendation. And the bourbon is good. So Yeah, I think that's top pick.
Yep. We also have a ton of breweries if you're, we're really good in alcoholic beverages here in Kentucky. Great breweries. If you're in Georgetown, which is really close to the horse show, actually close to the horse show, it's called Country Boy Brewery in Georgetown. There's also one in Lexington that's really fun to go to. There are a couple, just brewery and distilleries downtown that are super fun. The Distillery District is a new place in Lexington that's really fun to go to.
So we know Reese likes horses and liquor.
Yeah, it's true.
She's a Kentucky girl through and through.
Yeah, like, it's true. I like good food. And so we actually have quite a few really good restaurants. I'm afraid to tell everyone where to go because then I won't be able to get a reservation.
What about Doodles? Doodles is my favorite.
Doodles is great. So Doodles is a place for breakfast. And it's downtown. Oh, it's nice. Delicious.
Yeah.
And then, goodness, there's so many places. Midway, Kentucky is really a fun place to go. If you're kind of have an afternoon, it's not super far from the horse park. And you want a couple like really cool local shops that are pretty equestrian. Midway is a great place to go. And there's several nice restaurants there. And then, Georgetown, that's the town I live in, has a really cute place to go. Just a cute little downtown with several places to go eat. Which is really fun. So you really can't go wrong. And a lot of those places are really close. I obviously Louisville is about an hour and a half from Lexington, an hour, depending on where you're going. In Lexington, Cincinnati is also close, but we have some really fun things to do in Lexington. Downtown Lexington is also fun to go to. I would just heads up if there's a Kentucky basketball game. I'm not sure what the schedule is next week. That kind of dampers your plans downtown if you or want to go downtown.
Yeah, it's kind of busy. Park anywhere or can't park go anywhere. So yeah. Check the university basketball situation.
It's true. You got to. You can't. Philip knows. Like, we tried to go to dinner once. We're like, let's just get pizza and go back home. So that's super fun to do. So I hope that's a few ideas. You're always welcome to send me an email, reese@horseradionetwork.com. I will try to get back to you if with some fun places, but I hope you enjoy our town. It's a great time to be in Kentucky. Fall is really fun. And we also have football going on. There's lots of fun stuff going on right now. So we hope you enjoy your time while you're here in Lexington and the weather stays nice. It's quite cold this week and next week's not supposed to be too bad. So fingers crossed that it's not bad. But I'm looking forward to everyone coming. It should be a really good week.
All right. Well, in the meantime, good luck to everybody who is heading up for the national. So we are not going to be doing a show next week because Reese will be super busy. But
there's a few things going on. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on for her. So we're gonna be back the following week with the remaining episodes for this month. It's kind of a busy month with American Thanksgiving happening and whatever, and we're right around the corner from Christmas. So.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I know. It'll be fine. It'll be good. Next week, we'll take a deep breath and we hope you guys enjoy. We'll put some episodes up and it'll be good. But we look forward to it. So we're going to have a couple commercial breaks and come back with Fee Anderson.
He was her first love, the one that started it all. He taught her how to master the posting trot and navigate her first hunter course. They spent hours together exploring the trails and hanging out in the barn. His name was doodled on every page in her school notebook. His coat gleamed in the sun as he met her at the gate each day, snuffling for a treat. From the first time she saw him poking his head out of the stall to the last time she patted him goodbye, he was, and always will be, her everything. This love story is brought to you by Nalox Advanced, providing complete support for a healthy digestive tract, which reduces the risk of colic and digestive upset. The horse that matters to you matters to Kentucky Performance Products. Call 859-873-2974 or visit kppusa.com to order today.
Founded in 1973, the United States Dressage Federation has become the largest organization to represent a single Olympic equestrian discipline. At nearly 30,000 members strong, USDF is your connection to dressage education, competition, and achievement. Visit usdf.org to learn more about USDF education, competition, and award programs, and to shop our online store. Again, that's usdf.org, your online destination for dressage.
Well, tonight I am very excited to have my friend Fee Anderson on the show. Fee and I serve on a USCF committee together, and we have become friends over the year. Fee, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Fee, you and I were
excited to be here.
Yeah, we were on a conference call this week. We've been on lots of rule changes, which is good to say that Fee's on the line as well. There's lots of rule changes that are going to go into effect December 1st. So be sure to take a look at those because they're coming out. But we were chatting after our call, and I was telling you about the new 3-year-old horse that I just got. And we were talking about how in Europe, the expectations for 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds is a little bit different than the expectation here in North America. So Fee, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to America, and then we'll get into our discussion.
Yeah, so I grew up in Denmark and have been riding there my entire life. Came over here in 2001, I think. I wanted to change gears. I just finished a bachelor's in human nutrition in Denmark, and I knew that that was not the direction I wanted to take my life. So came over here, went to school for equine management, and did a minor in business. Brought my horse with me, and the rest is history. I've been riding dressage over here, started my own business, train horses, teach riders, and just loving being a part of the community over here.
So you brought a lot of European knowledge over to America, and that's what, 20 years ago or so.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, but obviously, you know, over the years, I think we can acknowledge that the riding and the horsemanship and all of those things around sport horses, especially, has been improving within America, North America, but I think there's still a little bit of a disconnect between, you know, this is just me speaking from personal experience, and a disconnect in backing horses, getting them started in their career, and then, you know, what's the expectations? We can talk about, you know, dressage horses. What's the expectation for a dressage horse, you know, in their training you know, for you know, 3 years old and 4 years old. So maybe you can address that question a little bit for me.
Well, you know, I think things just move along a little faster back home. The experience I have with backing horses in Europe with my old trainer, we would get them going pretty quickly, and we would expect them to be fairly well behaved. I mean, you might lunge them before, but you'd expect them to accept contact. You'd expect them to go forward from the leg. Slow down when you ask them to, you'd expect them to be on the bed. And I think over here, riders might not be quite as educated in how to bring young horses along and how much pressure to put on without doing too much. And, it, you know, I think a lot of people here, they baby the horses a little too much and don't have a clear vision of how much they want to accomplish within the first couple of months. And in Europe, there's a lot more horses per capita and a lot more riders that are used to bringing along youngsters. So there's a pipeline that I think we are still behind on over here. Yeah. I think we have a lack of riders that are brave enough and good enough to bring those youngsters along at the right timeline.
Yeah, no, I would completely agree, because I think having someone that is really competent with young horses and is able, you know, you kind of think about it too, like a nice kindergarten teacher, you know, a good kindergarten. I remember my kindergarten teacher. I loved her, but there was clear structure in our day, and there was clear time for fun, and there was clear time for work, and all that expectation was laid out really well. And, you know, I'm sure we were naughty in times because you're in kindergarten and you do things you're not supposed to. And I remember our teacher always being very kind with putting us sort of back in line or whatever it may be. And I think it's a great way to think of like a 3-year-old. You know, they're in kindergarten. You still have to get up every day. You have to go to school. You have to be on time. You know, you're learning all of these techniques, right? And having someone that understands that, I think that's really important, because they don't really have cowboys in Europe, right? Like, the horses go right to a rider that is going to educate them in dressage, correct?
Right. And you're making a super point right there. I think that some of the cowboys that are used over here are not familiar enough with what we need to develop in a dressage horse. So if you send a three-year-old that's ready to be back to the cowboy, and they have an expectation of the horse going in a very low frame, not necessarily stretching into the contact, but a low frame without weight on the bit, that's what he wants from the horse. That's what he trains it for. When you get your horse home, it's going to be a little tricky teaching the horse that, no, I want you to go to the contact, put weight on the bit, and let me have a good feel of your mouth, right? If they learn that that's not good when they're backed, that then needs to be corrected. And it's much easier teaching it right the first time rather than send the horse into a backing program where it's not really being developed for dressage or taught how its future expectations will be. So I think
you're almost having to reteach the horse, right? And I've had experiences with horses who, you know, don't like the contact or, you know, want to hang out a little bit behind the bit. I mean, that's one of the trickiest things throughout their entire career to fix.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the more that you can educate the horse correctly from the beginning, the less time you have to go back and redo these things. And I think in some ways, that's where we get a little bit behind because, you know, the horse gets backed. Okay. It accepts a rider. Right. But it doesn't accept the way that we want to train it. So now 4 years old comes around and then you're working on these things. And, you know, I think, you know, what you said about having, a kind but brave rider who's going to kind of push through the problems or start working on the training almost right away. And then the other part of it is providing this horse with, at 3 years old, providing this horse with experiences off the property, because eventually you're going to want to show it, right? So, you know, the other part of the problem is that we train over here, we kind of train our three-year-olds, you know, and we keep them away from the horse shows because of bravery issues, or perhaps we just don't have enough small shows small shows that you can take a young horse to, you know, that are inexpensive. And, you know, and that they're still safe and the footing is good and all. I know I struggle with this is because we have such a short show season in Canada. And normally by the time, you know, I want to take the young horses out, it's like, it's probably August or September and maybe even a little bit later, depending on the horse. And then there's nothing to go to. And now this is a problem. So, you know, in your training program for a young horse, I think you have to be, you know, always a little bit starting early so you can hit at least one or two shows or, you know, figure out what you want to go to, even if it's just taking this horse to another farm. You have to make time in your program to do that and to plan that out.
Absolutely. And I will say, I mean, on this side of North America, we are lucky. We have a really good breed show series. USDF they've done a really good job of developing that, where you have under saddle classes, you have in-hand classes, you have the material classes that are very suitable for young horses going out the first time. The expectations are very limited. The horse needs to go forward, be fairly on the eighth steer, all right. But if they misbehave a little bit when they're going around in their group class, it's not a big deal. The judge will judge the best of the gates and sort of ignore if there are little incidents in the arena. So I think it's a very good venue, at least for the Americans, to get their youngsters out to show. And unfortunately, not that many people use this avenue to get the youngsters out and show them the world.
Yeah, I think though some of them are hard to get to. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think in Europe, that's maybe another thing that we struggle with. You know, again, I'm blessed to be here in Kentucky, right? So we do have a show circuit. We don't have a lot of the breeding shows. We have, I think, one breeding show in the area versus in Europe, right? They have shows for 3 and 4 year olds. Am I right? Because you can take them out and they're in a group. So they're maybe a little more readily available just because of the size of the countries is smaller. Am I right?
Right. There? Yeah. The saturation of horses and shows are much greater in Europe, generally speaking, than here. And what I would say is if there is, enough people in a location over here and they're having a dressage show coming up, all they need to do is ask the show manager or show secretary if they could please add material classes to the price list. And of course, they will have to go to USDF, probably USEF, and get their price list amended. But it is possible. I've done it in the past because I had a youngster I felt needed to go out and go in a group class. And the show manager was very kind and added the class for me. So I would encourage people with young horses coming up to consider that if they want to get their horse out, but they're not ready for the training level class, then the material class could be a good avenue.
Yeah, and then the only other thing I'd like to just kind of add is, you know, it's popular, at least up here, to, you know, to buy a younger horse. What's available for people's budget. You know, they say, oh, well, you know, I can't really afford a 5-year-old who's going, and, you know, and then so they end up buying an unbacked horse or, you know, a weanling or whatever. And I think your budget has to include at least 2 years of training, and depending on, you know, what level rider you are. But you know, people who are backing horses and do it as a specialty, and there's lots of great ones, but it's not for your average rider. Right. And it may not, you know, you may not have to budget for, you know, your team rider to be training your horse, but you need somebody who's really good and has experience in starting young horses and experience in taking them to shows and all of this. So, you know, research that before you go out and buy a horse that you say, okay, at this point, I'm going to need to spend some money, you know, because getting it started right, it's just so incredibly important to having a great experience with a horse in general. And, you know, because going wrong and then having to go back and spend, you know, if you had budgeted a year's worth of training, well, if it's not done right, you're going to have to spend three more years training, figuring out, you know, what went wrong or, you know, whatever. So I just think that's important for people who are interested in buying a young horse, you know, how to get it done right and what the budget is for that.
Absolutely agreed. I think people forget that there's a reason why a well-backed 4 or 5 or 6 year old costs what they cost. It takes time to develop a horse and it takes skill. It's specialized. And if somebody wants to back their own horse and bring it along, I applaud that. But I would really encourage people to make sure that they have enough money in their budget to work with a really good trainer so that they don't accidentally end up down the wrong path and then have to spend even more money and time retraining issues with the horse. I mean, it's like it's with everything else. You have to pay for what you want. So it's a shame when you see a nice, talented youngster under a rider that needs help that can't get that help. That is such a shame. I mean, we breed great horses over here. We are catching up on Europe. We still need the riders to learn how to train these youngsters. So I think your point is very valid.
I was just going to say that people should value the correct training almost more than a horse with great gaits, because if the training isn't right, those gaits are never gonna be able to get into a horse show ring.
Exactly. That is exactly the point.
Well, and I think a good thing to remember too, and I have to be perfectly honest, I just bought this 3-year-old, super excited. I don't really ride 3-year-olds very often. I'm not going to lie. Never really have. I can do it, of course. But I have a very good qualified assistant that she loves young horses and she's really good at it. And I have no problem saying, you know, that's not really my skill set, or it's not. I mean, I haven't ridden a 3-year-old in a long time, and she's doing a wonderful job, and I'm happy to support her because I think it's that skill is so needed here. So I, where I'm going with this, it's okay to say, well, you know what, I'm not gonna ride that my 3-year-old horse for a little bit until actually he was so good today, I was itching to get on, but that's a good thing, right? And but the point is, there are good people and we need to support them and their careers because we really need riders that are able to do that. So, you know, I don't know how you guys feel about that, but it is fun to watch somebody who's really good with young horses and gives them confidence. That's pretty cool. So that's what I chose to do.
Right. And I think that's awesome. You have somebody that's talented and comfortable and enjoys it. And the horses, I really believe that horses feel intent. So if you have to swallow three times before you get on the youngster because you're nervous, well, guess what? They know that. They feel that. Then they start worrying. So I think it's imperative to have a rider that likes it, that has fun with it, and that can handle a little spunk, and then have a really good qualified helper on the ground so that little things get caught early on and gets corrected. I think you're in a great setup with your three-year-old. The way you're doing is great.
Yeah. And no, I think it's a good way to do it. Well, Fee, we can't thank you enough for coming on the show and talking with us and giving us your expertise with youngsters. How can our listeners find you online?
Well, I spent a little time on Facebook, and I might just have gotten myself a TikTok channel. I don't know what happened. It might have something to do with my nieces and nephews in Denmark. But yeah, TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook under Equido Dressage.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
We're the Healthy Critters Crew. I'm Tigger.
I'm Patty.
And I'm Coach Jen.
If you're a horse lover, dog lover, cat lover, llama lover, chicken lover, parrot lover, paw and hooves and feathers lover, Healthy Critters is for you. We have fascinating guests, nutrition tips, information on various critters, and the only talking Pomeranian dog on the radio.
Hello, everyone.
Join us for our bi-monthly laughter-filled romps on HRN.
Brought to you by BioStar US.
Well, tonight we are so happy to have Ann Millman. She is the founder of HorseReportSystem.com. Welcome, Ann, to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, Ann, start telling us a little bit about yourself and how did you decide to create this app?
Yeah, so I was a number of years ago back, like late 80s, early 90s, I was a dressage and event working student. And I worked with Sharon and Grant Schneidman for a number of years. And then just when Hilltop was starting, I went to work with Scott Hassler. And I ended up spending most of my college years up there during the summers working. His mother, Jill, ran an advanced young rider clinic or sort of summer camp. So I was a camp counselor for several years and rode sort of whatever was up there at Hilltop. And so Scott and his wife, Suzanne, became close friends. And my professional life took a turn very much away from horses, but I still kept in touch with a lot of my riding friends and did some writing for some of the horse magazines like Dressage Today and Practical Horseman, just sort of fun freelance stuff. So when Hilltop Farm and Harmony Sport Horses decided to have the first of the Young Dressage Horse Trainer Symposia, Suzanne called me and asked me if I could come and write up, you know, an article for one of the magazines because they wanted it covered, but they wanted someone that they knew in case, you know, the wheels really came off the bus for somebody with a young horse. And so, anyway, that's how I got to know sort of this whole new cadre of, you know, young horse trainers. And, I remember meeting you, Reese, there.
Yes.
And,
everybody knows that. Is my coach and a great friend of mine as well. So any friend of his friend of mine for sure.
That's right. Yeah. So anyway, got to know some of the riders. And so meanwhile, my professional life was in healthcare, and I've spent the past 20 years really working in patient safety and medical error, understanding how teamwork and communication contributes to that. And so there was a big move to electronic medical records so that the whole team was on the same page. And, you know, I realized in talking to people like Aaron Crawford, who became a good friend, and others, that people were still like, you know, at the end of the day, having, you know, phone calls with owners to tell them what the horse had done. And, you know, maybe some text messaging was starting back in the early 2000s. We didn't have, smartphones then, but it was just, you know, I just thought, I remember that from a working student at the end of a long day, there's just this, you know, then all these phone calls from owners, like, what did the horse do? And did the farrier come? And blah, blah, blah. And I thought, you know, this is really crazy. So that was really sort of sowed the seed for there has to be a better way to just communicate among the team. And also to really, instead of like paper calendars where you lose track of what's happened 2 months ago because it's hard to look that stuff up, why don't we have, you know, a better way of recording training progress and you know, health issues, that sort of thing. So over the past, gosh, too many years, started out as a website. And then with the beginning of smartphones, we've moved more to a web app. So the horse report system really came out of a lot of thinking about the best way to streamline communication and how to have all of that really important information about your horse or horses in the palm of your hand. And so I've been really fortunate to have people like Aaron Crawford, who's been kicking the tires and now using it, and Suzanne Owen and a number of other riders who've given great input. And so it's really, there are a number of other barn management systems on the market, but I really think of this as a horse management system. And that's, I think, the most important sort of differentiator. We have a really easy to use dashboard. All of your horses are listed there. You can, all of their profiles contain the really important information the whole team needs to know. You can upload photos and documents, et cetera. And then everything that you enter as far as an activity is color-coded based on the type, if it's a health activity or therapy or work. And you can have this comprehensive overview, really, of a horse's entire sort of life, of his health, his training, a lot of, we call it horse report system because there's a lot of really easy functionality for searching by keywords. So, you know, when did you last change? You know, you changed a bit a couple of months ago. No one can remember off the top of their heads when that was, or which foot had the abscess, you know, last year, whatever. So that's, in a nutshell, that is what, where Horse Report System came from, really to get teams on the same page. So the subscriber can invite any number of other people, from grooms to therapists, barn managers, everyone. So it has a little bit of a barn management flavor, a little bit of a training journal or log flavor. Suzanne Owen actually is using it in an interesting way. She doesn't have horses of her own, but has students. She's invited them, and so they make notes on their own rides with their horses, and she sometimes rides their horses as well. So when she goes to teach someone, she's already read through. She's, you know, sort of up to speed on what the horse has done over the past week. They don't spend the first 10 or 15 minutes, you know, going through, well, what have you done for 2 weeks? It's a, you know, a real time saver. It's an efficiency to have that information, you know, that both the trainer and owners and riders are all on the same page.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. And you know, I've kind of been doing my little research, you know, and figuring out, you know, what would be my spin on it, you know. But I think it would be just super useful, not from a barn manager perspective, but from an owner perspective. And you kind of were talking about this and saying, you know, because there's just so many little health things, or or, you know, like your farrier is there every 6 weeks and the farrier says, oh, you know, this foot or, you know, or this has a little thrush there. I mean, I would yep, certainly take the opportunity, you know, to make a note of that and write that down. So, because a farrier also, you know, you can add them on, and they, you know, they don't have enough time or, you know, to make personal notes. You know, they see what they see, they tell you, because it's your responsibility to look after your horse. But the next time they come, or even 6 months, you know, from that moment, you can look back and say, oh, remember he was a little thrushy, you know, can what do you think about that? And then, you know, you're kind of keying in with your whole team about, you know, these things that, you know, they say, and then they walk away, or a vet was like, doing your, you know, you can put in your yearly vaccination records. You can, I mean, there's just so much you can put in. And what I like too, as well, is, you can upload the horse's information, like, you know, here's its registry number, here's, you know, and that kind of stuff is really useful to have where you are at the moment, rather than being, you know, in a file folder in the office.
Yeah, exactly. And the, you know, photos are, you know, worth a thousand words, right? So, you know, horse who comes in from the field with a big leg or a cut or whatever, it take a photo, goes into his profile, a remote owner can log in and see it, rather than the back and forth. Well, how does it look today? And is it healing? And, you know, not to, to streamline the communication. And that's the way people who have invited remote owners really like that ability. And I've heard from owners who are like, this, I feel so connected. My horse is 1,000 kilometers away at a trainer's, but I feel like I know what he's doing on a daily basis. So that's really gratifying, because I know I would want that. If I ever have a horse again, I would like to know, you know, what he's doing. So,
and so tell us about the tiered system on the app.
So there are a number of tiers. And it's based on the number of horses. So for just a private, you know, amateur owner with just a few horses, there's a, what we call the limited tier. And the big difference there is up to 3 horses, and you can't invite other team members. And that is the limited tier. And then tier 1, it's up to 10 horses. And then the different tiers just are up to 25 horses, 50 horses, or unlimited number of horses. And with all of those tiers, you can invite an unlimited number of people. So barn manager, breeding managers, your assistant trainers, other trainers, as well as the stable staff like grooms and working students and therapists, also business managers. So there's not a billing functionality in it, but it's so easy to run reports. You know, how many times did the horse have chiropractic or whatever last month? Or if you did a full body clip on the horse and you charge back to a client for that, very easy to run those reports. So that's why we had some requests. So I would really love our business manager to be able to get in here and run their own reports for billing. So those are all of the, and then of course, being able to invite an owner or an owner agent. And it is, there are different levels of access to what can be modified by the different levels. If it's sort of the more professional or stable staff or owners, owners only have read-only access. So they can't change anything in there. They can just see what has been put in.
Well, I like it. You know, I think I'm going to, you know, look more into it. You know, I don't have a big barn, but it's just really nice to, you know, create records. And like you said, you know, whether it's an injury or it's just some information that you have a history, like you can look back on it. I think that's perhaps, in my perspective, the best function of it's just, you know, creating a quick record, whether it's, you know, like you said, you know, a horse comes in with a big leg or whatever, I can easily just jot that down. And, you know, and then there's a record of it, and I can refer back to it. And the owner, like you said, the owner can have access to it. So I think that's a super part of this program.
Yeah. And of course, inviting owners is totally optional. Some people like, no, you know, that's not, I don't want to do that. We just use it amongst us in the stable, and that's fine too. I would say that the other thing that is really helpful is for conditioning as well, because, you know, you can add in, you know, pill work and, you know, set in, you can put in a whole program. You can put things in prospectively. So if you know you have certain fitness goals, you need to meet with a horse, you can sort of put those all in and then know what's coming up during the week, put in competitions that are coming up, you know, sort of count backwards from those so you can, you know, hit milestones or goalposts or whatever. So from that perspective, it's a nice training log as well.
Fantastic. So Anne, tell us, how can we find you and find the app online?
Super. Thanks. Yeah. It's horsereportsystem.com. It's a web app. So this is a website that runs on any device with a web browser. So your phone, your tablet, or a laptop. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Horse Report System. So we'd love you to follow us and send in ideas. We're always adding new features and love to hear from users.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for telling us about it and telling us your story. That was fantastic.
Great. Thank you, Reese. Thank you, Philip.
Get ready to turn heads with this beautifully styled, meticulously designed arena saddle crafted from European leather without sacrificing comfort for you or your horse. The classic elegance and unbeatable quality of arena saddles will take your seat to the next level in the dressage ring. Arena saddles are known for their beauty, comfort, and practicality. You can't deny these stylish saddles have eye appeal, but you might be wondering, what makes an arena saddle so comfortable? Features like ultra-soft seats and knee inserts, a perfectly balanced seat, customizable rider support, and extra protective cushioning to give your horse softness and freedom that make arena saddles the premier choice for any discerning rider. Priced at just $1,599, the Arena Dressage Saddle is the saddle for you. Visit arenasaddles.com to view the full range of saddles available and find a retailer near you.
Well, tonight we are really excited to have newly minted Olympic Paralympic coach, along with FEI rider and trainer Luhua Kusser on the line. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh, what a summer have you had, lady?
Oh, no kidding. It's been a whirlwind, but very exciting, very fun. And I'm excited to get to talk about it a little bit tonight.
I know. So we wanted to talk about you and Kate Schumacher. You have been her coach, and you guys went to quarantine in Aachen, went to the Olympics in Tokyo. So maybe you can start to talk about how you and Kate started working together and kind of just start us on the whole process to get with you guys.
Yeah, that sounds great. So I live in Florida now, and I was a trainer in Los Angeles for many years, and Kate was in Arizona. And so we were occasionally at the same shows and would end up stabling near each other and waving hellos. And we both found ourselves in Wellington a couple of years ago, and I had a horse boarded at a little lovely barn in Little Ranches, and all of a sudden the empty farm next door had a bunch of buzz, and I see a truck pull out and it has Idaho license plates. And I knew that Kate had family in Idaho. And so I rolled down my window and I said, I think I know you. And we started chatting and she said, come and teach me tomorrow. And that was how that started. And it's been amazing ever since. So she is, as we know, a para rider. She's not the first that I've taught, but definitely the most accomplished. So it's been fun for me to be on the road with her, learning how to be in the best para coach and best coach that, you know, in general that I can. And so it's been amazing to go this far with her in the last few years and cap it off with the experience at the Paralympics in Tokyo. So yeah, that was kind of our meeting, and we just kind of hit the ground running with her and Solly from there, and with the goal of Tokyo. And of course now it took an extra year. So we were happy actually in a way to have that time to connect as a pair more, she and I, and also, you know, the three of us together. So that's kind of that part of that journey.
That's kind of neat. So in your opinion, you know, what makes this partnership between coach, rider, and horse all click enough that she was able to represent the U.S.?
Well, I think every partnership's a bit different. Kate is a very experienced and dynamic rider. She's a wonderful rider. She could probably do that as a profession, but she's already also a fantastic veterinarian. She does sport horse medicine. And bringing all of that knowledge to the plate, it makes my job easy, I have to say, in a way, because we collaborate a lot more than me just barking orders at her. And it's a really fun process. I can't wait to come, you know, teach her every day. And I get to ask her questions too. So it's a really fun dynamic. And I'm in for it. I love learning as much as I love teaching. And so I feel like for the two of us, it becomes very collaborative, and I am her eyes on the ground. And, you know, I of course coach her and give her information, but we give each other feedback as well. So it's a really nice kind of almost feels like colleagues talking. It's great. I really enjoy it. It seems to work for us. It's different. You know, every partnership is different, and that's kind of how we operate, and a lot of mutual respect and, you know, we have fun. We also have a lot of fun. It has to be fun. It's a stressful sport at times, so we make sure we have a whole lot of fun too.
I love it. So what was kind of the qualifying period and then your time in Aachen like? Because that was really kind of an interesting and stressful journey to Aachen, staying there and then going to Tokyo. So tell us about that part of the journey.
Sure. Well, qualifying is similar, I suppose, to an able-bodied in some ways. It's points and it's, you know, looking into all of the factors that would make each team a viable member of the, you know, each horse and rider team, a viable member of the Paralympic team. And when she was announced that she was on the short list, it was just so exciting. And we just hoped and prayed and crossed our fingers and toes until we got the final information. And of course, they don't give us anything ahead of time, no sneaky info at all. They're very tight-lipped, which is, of course, the right thing. But we were on pins and needles until we found out she was on the team. And it actually was, you know, all happened pretty quick, it felt like. And then all of a sudden, a lot of organizing and planning and packing, so much packing. And getting everybody safely to Aachen was a big undertaking for everybody. And Kate she ended up moving on to another job after, but she had a wonderful groom that helped. And she helped set everything up and pack everything and kind of got everything going and making sure Solly traveled well and was well received on the other side. There's just so much stress in that way, except Solly's a really good traveler. So it wasn't so bad. Getting to Aachen was really exciting for me because I've gone as a spectator, you know, in the stands and with all the crowds, and to be able to be behind the scenes. And yes, it wasn't during a competition as I had gone before, but seeing the stables and kind of being behind the scenes was really, really fun for me personally. And getting to see all of the other countries move in and kind of prep with their horses was really fun. You could see the camaraderie already beginning there before we got to Tokyo. It was cold though.
Yeah.
So that was a change. We had all been in Florida and a bit prepping for the warmth of Tokyo. So I'm not sure if it was great or if it was maybe not so good to be in the cold for a few days before we went to back to the heat of Tokyo. I don't handle cold well, so it was cold for me.
Fair enough. Well, yeah. some of us are forced to in our northern living situation.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So
I've heard.
I was going to say, you know, like, I know the team, you know, and all the people around it, like, sort of try to prepare riders and coaches and the whole thing, you know, but I want to know, like, perhaps there's an experience or something that you, in a good way or maybe a negative way, in which you were not prepared for in going to Tokyo. What kind of surprised you?
I guess I had a pretty open mind because I didn't know what to expect. I think the biggest thing was something that nobody could control, and that was COVID. We had to really appreciate and respect the fact that the Japanese people invited us in, even though we were bringing in, you know, potential risk for their people. And that was hard because, you know, we wanted to not have a negative impact. And we also really wanted to get to see the beautiful country, and it was absolutely forbidden, understandably. And so that was a real bummer. We had been warned, but it didn't really hit me until we were flying in and I was looking out the airplane window and realizing I wouldn't see any of it. But it was what we signed up for. So I was ready. I was sad, but I was ready. I even have a brother, a half brother that lives there, and he happened to get married while I was there. And I couldn't see him. So that was hard. It is what it is. And we weren't there for that, you know, and it's strict quarantine while you're in Tokyo. And we all understood it going in. So that was personally very hard. But, you know, for getting the opportunity to be at the games and participate, it was 100% worth it. One of the things I really didn't know about or understand was the incredible amount of coordination and work that goes into making it happen, you know, even more so with the para group, maybe than the able-bodied, because they all have, a lot of them have wheelchairs and power chairs, and it's a lot of stuff to coordinate, and a lot of people are really working around the clock, truly working around the clock connected with our team. And I would have not known that until I was in that situation. So I was extremely impressed. USCF is amazing. And what they did to make it happen for us, you know, is incredible. And I had not been on a team as a rider and obviously not as a coach either. So this was my first foray into it. And I was in awe, to be honest. And it's everybody just works their tails off. The team coach, Michelle, was fantastic. That was another surprise, really getting to spend more time with the staff and with the people kind of that make things happen was really neat. I enjoyed that. And also the other three coaches, I got to become more close friends with them, and they're all fantastic, the personal coaches. And so we had a really, really good time. So that was good. That was an unexpected positive.
That's fantastic. And what was it like to see Kate and the other US riders go down the center line once you got there?
Finally. Of course. I'm really, really, as a coach, I get to be really confident in Kate and Solly. They're such a solid partnership, and Kate's a really dynamic, as I said, a really dynamic and knowledgeable rider. So I actually have learned to relax when I watch her ride. And as a coach, I'm normally on pins and needles watching my horses and riders go. So that was a real joy for me, knowing that we had put everything we could into it and there's nothing more that could be done. And she really pulled it out, and it was amazing. Watching some of the other riders, I, of course, almost always sob when I watch Roxy ride. She just moves me. It's amazing. And knowing more about Bea's story and everything that she'd overcome to get to that point was amazing. And I got to stand ringside for her ride, which was really cool because you get to have spotters for the grade two. And that was really fun. So I felt like I was really in the action, in on the action. And then Becca is so knowledgeable. She's been to so many games and had so many events under her belt. So it was fun to get to hear from her, you know, some of the ins and outs, and she was just there for us. Some of us that hadn't been there before, you know, little things to do, which is great. So it was really fun. It was a very supportive group all the way around.
Wow. What an experience. So what would be kind of the final takeaway that you got by going to the Olympic Games? If you were to talk to another para rider or any rider actually just wanting to get to that stage, what would your advice be?
Oh, that's such a great question. Probably to persevere and not let stress get you down. It's really easy to get swayed by things that can and will go wrong. Equipment not arriving, a horse having an off day, they're not feeling well, or they pull a shoe, or whatever it is, that you don't let it crush you and you keep going. And there's so many things behind the scenes that are imperfect that happen, and we don't see them. We see when we're watching the live streams or we're watching the riders in the arena, we don't see all of that. And we assume it's all so easy and perfect and great for them. And I now can really, truly, personally say that it is not that easy, and things can and will go wrong every step of the way. And the riders that can roll with it and can keep going and keep their head on their shoulders will persevere. And I really think that's how they pulled off that historic bronze medal, because they just, all four of them, just kept it together when everyone was exhausted or overheated or tired, and the will to succeed was above all of that. And that's, I think, what happens when you get to the end of 3 long weeks of competing, preparing and competing, that you just have to have that stamina and that mindset. And it was amazing to watch. And really, truly, they picked the right people for that team.
Awesome. Well, fantastic. Well, Lugo, this is such a cool interview. And if anybody has any questions for you, how can they find you online?
I think the easiest way would to be through personal messenger on Facebook, and just spell out my name, LEHUACUSTER, and direct message me. And you could also email me the same spelling at gmail.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Well, Phil, today we were really working on saddle fit and bit fit, and it was a busy day here at the farm. Kind of, you did the same thing last week. It was our time this week. And it's so helpful, but it came up today. We're fitting a gypsy vanner, actually. So, not necessarily the body style, great mind, not necessarily the body style of a dressage athlete. But it came up because his saddle shifts significantly. And we already use a total saddle fit girth on him, but the neoprene liner came up. And I hadn't thought about that for helping the saddle not shift left and right. And that is one of the things that I love about the total saddle fit girth, is that there's so many options, which is really cool. So we're going to switch him to the neoprene liner, which is not expensive. It's very reasonable and holds up great. So we're really excited to have that come. And I wanted to share that with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's perfect. The different options is something that I really appreciate about the total saddle fit girths. I'm just in the process of changing over the summer neoprene ones for the guys that wear it into the winter fluffy ones, the wool lined ones, mm-hmm. because, once we clip, I think it's important to think about the horse's comfort and their skin and all of that stuff. So, but again, like, you don't have to go out and buy a whole new girth. You're just, they're Velcro. So you just rip, take the liner, this liner, it doesn't work. Okay, we're going to just put on this liner and off you go. I mean, it's really a great way to customize what you need for each horse, in their girths. So yeah, we love it. We love all the products from Total Saddle Fit. You can find them at totalsaddlefit.com. They'll take very good care of you. And the products all come with a 90-day money back guarantee. So you can't lose.
This week's dressage training tip is brought to you by Total Saddle Fit, home of the shoulder relief girth, at totalsaddlefit.com.
Well, for tonight's Total Saddle Fit tip of the week, we have Fee Anderson, FEI rider and trainer, on the show. And Fee, we are talking about No Stirrup November. Dun, dun, dun. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, so this is actually a pretty hot topic because it is November, and a lot of people, this is a thing, right? And so give us your tips on No Stirrup November, because we were just chatting before we got on the air, and there's a lot of good to this, but there is some bad to this. So it's important to talk about.
Absolutely agreed. So I have to say, I cringe a little bit when I see all the posts online about everybody dropping the stirrups for the month of November. I feel for the poor horses that have to endure that. I would much rather see people dropping the stirrups 5 minutes in a lesson while they're feeling supple and strong in their bodies and they can hold themselves and swing their hips out of the way so they don't end up rattling around on the horse's backs or squeezing with their thighs, which is also quite uncomfortable for the horses. So I always get a little sad when people bear down and do the whole month of November in no stirrups. I'm sure that the horses would like some pemp for massages or chiropractic workup afterwards. I think it's a little too much.
All the above, probably.
Yeah, I think it's about improving your riding within a context. So, how your horse is feeling about it. So, just dropping your stirrups arbitrarily, for the month of November probably isn't a great thing. I might prefer, get yourself a lesson on the lunge line November, or, ride a different horse November. There's a lot of ways to improve your riding. And if you're not prepared to, drop your, take away your stirrups for, for a whole month and for 45 minutes worth of riding, like you said, it's out of context. It's not correct. Right. So just feel for your horse a little bit and feel for, do it in small sections, perhaps do it for 5 minutes in trot or 5 minutes in canter, and you know, make a more individualized plan for your riding and for your horse, and talk to your trainer for sure. You know, as three trainers on here, we're like, you know, we can certainly think of students where, you know, no stirrup November could be appropriate, but we can also think of students which it would, you know, completely not be. So yeah, individualize your program for you.
Right. And I love that you bring up lunch lessons. I mean, how many do you get to teach? I have to tell my students that I think it's time. It's a valuable tool, and you create a very safe space for students to experiment with different things. And that could also be leaving the stirrups for part of the ride and get them stronger in their course and get a better feel of the horse's back moving underneath them. I don't think that is a tool that's utilized enough, generally speaking.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think, again, you have three professional riders. There are some horses, you know, I'm pretty fit riding wise. And I mean, there's some horses that I'm not going to come out and just drop my stirrups on for the month of November. You know, like, it is getting cold and it is not necessarily the best idea on some horses. Now, some horses I think can be okay. And then other horses, you know, it's just not possible. Or if you have an injury, it's okay to not do no stirrup November, right? I think, you know, there's some peer pressure, I'm sure, that's going on. But it's also okay to say, you know what, it's just not 100% what I need to do this year. And that's okay. Or, you know what, I'm going to do 5 minutes every day or something like that. But I think it's pretty ambitious. And again, we love goals. Don't get us wrong. But to just say, okay, it's November, I'm going to drop my stirrups and just put them in the tack room for your poor horse. That's a lot. So I think we're all in agreement that that's maybe not the best thing that you could do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe go for quality over quantity. Maybe 5 minutes of really good sitting trot without the stirrups, or a nice supple canter without the stirrups, and then put them back on.
Yeah. I love that. A little moderation, not necessarily the worst thing. No, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. And like we said, you know, if your horse is not appropriate for a lunge lesson, where, you know, where I think you have to kind of put some side reins on and experiment with, like you said, with different things, but also be able to let go of the reins, then search out, talk to your coach, or, you know, maybe there's a lesson barn or somebody can lend you a horse to do that, because I think that's way more beneficial to get some lunge lessons where, you know, maybe you can take the stirrups off. And it'd be more safe than more appropriate to be doing than on your own horse or the horse that you normally lesson on. So, you know, be creative and talk to your coach and see what would be appropriate for you.
Definitely. We're all in this for the horses and to have a good time with them and enjoy ourselves. So we should remember to do that during No Stirrup November too.
I love it. Well, Fee, thank you so much for your tip this week. And how can our listeners find you online?
They can find me on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok. They can find me under the handle Equito Dressage. And Equito is spelled E-Q-U-I-T-O.
Fantastic. Well, Phil, as always, we love email and Facebook shout outs. Keep them coming. We've got several this week that were just really sweet and we enjoy always reading them. And we want to remind everybody, because soon we are going to do the book review for Horse Plus Rider Equals One, How to Achieve the Fluid Dialogue That Leads to Harmonious Performance by Eckhart Miners. And you can get it at horseandriderbooks.com. And it's a great book. Phil and I have both been reading and chatting about it already. And it's got great exercises. It's 60 exercises, in fact. And we hope you guys enjoy it. The United States Dressage Federation is your connection to dressage education, competition, and achievement. Visit usdf.org for more information. That's www.usdf.org, the online destination for dressage. You can find our show notes and links to today's guests on our website, dressageradio.com. Like us on Facebook, just search Dressage Radio Show. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
I think the best way to find me is probably on Facebook, and my email is philip@horseradionetwork.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors for allowing us to put on a good show. That's Kentucky Performance Products, Arena Saddles, Horse Report System, and TotalSaddleFit.com. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
Everybody, keep your heels down, your shoulders back. Safe travels if you're coming here to Lexington. I hope to see you at US Finals, and we will talk to you in a couple weeks.